Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here are your hosts, Joe Kuzma and Brian E. Roach.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name is Joe Kuzma, and joined by my usual cohort, colleague, and partner in crime, a one, Mr. Brian E. Roach. Brian, you know, you're not the reason that this is a special edition of our show.
Aww. I'm very sorry. Thought it was about me. Isn't it always about me?
Hey, I know the dynamic duo got back together, you know, like, you know, I was MIA for a little bit, but, you know, there's nothing special about either of us today. We do have a guest, but before we bring our special guest on, I did want to ask you, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing just fine. I'm loving life. Things are exciting and wondrous, and I'm happy man.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I don't want to say I'm necessarily down in the dumps, man, but I'm getting sick of like moseying around on the walking boot. You know, they tell you to stay completely off of it, and what little bit I had to be on this weekend with my child had like this little, you know, school function and things of that nature, and it's just like, geez, oh man, I can't wait to get out of this thing. Then maybe me and you could jump off of that Las Vegas hotel sometime here in the near future, and maybe we could find a few other crazy people that might want to jump in the comments or shoot us a message and say, hey, when are you doing this? This could become a thing, Brian. This could become a thing. I don't know. We'll see what's going on. It could be a Steel City Underground special event, which could be scary, to be completely honest. You know, before we jump into the other stuff too, I think we should at least mention some of the other current events going on, and you know, very shocking news the other day. You know, tragic, sudden, you know, death of Kobe Bryant. I don't have any other way of saying it, but you know, many other people have mentioned it, and I didn't want to be ignorant of it because I realized just how much he had touched others' lives, and it's just, you know, it's something that's very tragic and unfortunate, and you know, we just wanted to maybe, you know, send our condolences to those who had been affected, including any family or friends or even just fans.
Yeah, I mean, our sympathies go out to his, you know, his daughters that are remaining and wife, the families of the other people who were involved in the crash. You know, it's always the events like this always get a lot more headlines and attention, but you know, it's always tragic when anybody, you know, has to lose their life in a situation like this, regardless of whether they're, you know, a famous basketball player or not. But, yeah, certainly, you know, our condolences to everyone involved and anybody whose life was touched by such a tragic event.
Yeah, and we do have a special guest today, and, you know, he's also brought along two special guests with him, and with that, we'll introduce former Steelers running back Merrill Hodge here in one moment, but he also has with him some special guests from the Center for Cartilage Restoration at Allegheny Health Network's Orthopedic Institute, and their names are Dr. Brian Mosier and Dr. Greg Purnell, and they are talking about some kind of really I don't know. It's like a revelation. It's like this innovation with sports medicine. And Merrill is very involved in all of these things. And he's here to tell us not only about that, but some stories with his career and also with the status of the current Steelers team and NFL as well. So without further ado, I would like to introduce the man of the hour. And, you know, this is a big one, Brian. One big special guest here, a former member of the Pittsburgh Steelers, former running back, and also a longtime NFL analyst, a one Mr. Merrill Hodge. Merrill, how are you doing today?
Man, I'm fantastic. Good to be with you.
I could say the same. Grew up, you know, I was born in 81, so I grew up watching you a lot, and I know Brian's going to be upset because he calls me ageist, but I know he watched you a lot more than what, but I was a little guy, so it was one of the first things I remember playing. You were in Tecmo Bowl, and I remember playing that as a kid on the original Nintendo, so very, very cool to have you on, and we're going to jump right into some questions here since I know you got a very busy schedule. So thank you once again for taking time out of your day to join us and our listeners. I think we want to start off initially, like, you know, with your life. You grew up in Idaho, went to high school and, you know, went to college, played college ball there. What kind of contrast is that to, you know, a life in pro football playing in Pittsburgh?
Well, I can tell you my flight coming in will tell you everything. Now, I had never gone very far out of the state of Idaho to play football. I was predominantly in the West. I'd only been on a plane one other time until I got drafted. And in the West and in Idaho, I mean, there's beautiful mountains and there's desert. I mean, really, that's the kind of what the West is. If it's not mountains, it's desert. So when I flew into Pittsburgh, I'd seen Tarzan movies before where they have just rolling hills and all these trees. And when I was flying in, I looked out the window. I was like, oh my gosh, that's where they must film all those Tarzan movies. Cause I was like, I've never seen so many hills and trees. I was like, oh my gosh. So, it was a bit of a shock to me. It was completely different. I didn't even know where, the state of Pennsylvania was when I got drafted. And this will really date me. You're not old enough. Maybe nobody on this call is old enough to remember it, but when I was drafted, or when I was like 19, 20 years old, when the Steelers drafted, they said they're in Pittsburgh and Pennsylvania. I was like, where is Pennsylvania at? So I think back in the day, the only thing that you had that resembled, I think everybody had this global map. I mean, it was like a round ball of the world. Mm-hmm. You could find, that's where the United States was. That's, you know, you don't have the access to Google and anything. So I remember I ran downstairs. I flipped that world ball around, and I'm like, Pennsylvania. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's next to New York. I'm like, yeah, I'm going that far across the country. So that gives you an idea a little bit of how green I was, the differences that I was experiencing. But I will tell you this, I consider Pittsburgh home. I've loved every minute there, and my foundation is there, and things I do are still there, and I just love the city.
Yeah, and, you know, it's very funny you mentioned the globe, because I have a six-year-old daughter, and she actually requested one of those. They actually sold, like, a little one with a Barbie doll that she recently got Christmas, birthday, I don't remember
good
which.
For her.
Yeah, but there's, like, so, and I had one of those, so I'm not that, you're not dating it too much, but maybe some of these, you know, other, you know, younger folks that might be listening, they don't know what the Encyclopedia Britannica is at this moment, but, you know, times were a little different back then, too, and this is one of my favorite trivia questions. In fact, we may have interacted on Twitter, maybe even, I don't know, maybe through the official Steel City Underground account, or maybe even a personal like a year or two ago. But I got tunch with this one at one of the draft things they do at Heinz Field. And I asked them what round you were drafted in, because they don't have 10 rounds anymore. So what was
not
that?
Right.
Yeah, what was that experience like? That sounds kind of crazy to me. It sounds like a very long, drawn-out process, even though it still kind of feels that way in many ways today.
Yeah, well, if I remember right, it was 3 days too, and it was actually a total of 12 rounds. And I was projected to go really in the earlier rounds, no later than the fourth or fifth, and I was projected to go to the Raiders. That's where I was projected to go. So obviously that didn't happen. And I can just tell you this, that it was, I just got to the point where I'm like, I just wanted to be drafted by a team who needed me. And the Steelers had come in to rework me out after the combine, because I was actually sick at the combine. I had I'm glad. I don't think they have any footage from back then. I don't think they videoed it like they do today. But if they had, I could be running. I could probably be a candidate for the worst combine workout in the history of the combine. I was terrible. I mean, I was sick. I lost 10 pounds. Like,
wow.
I mean, that was terrible. There was nothing I did well. Well, I did the 20-yard agility drill really well. That's it. And so the teams came back in to work me out, and the Steelers were one of them. And the scout that was, and what they do is they get a hold of you the day before they come. They let you know, you meet them down there. And he was back in the room watching tape. I went back to meeting. Like, I would meet other scouts, and then we'd go work out, and then we'll be through some drills, take an hour or whatever. So I asked him if you want me to go work out, and he was watching tape. He's like, no. He goes, but let me ask you this. You play basketball? So it kind of threw me. I'm like, well, yeah, I was really good in high school, and I loved basketball. He goes, well, good. There's a basketball team that the Steelers have in the offseason. You can play on that, and you can actually make some money in the offseason just playing basketball. And I said, okay. I said, do you want me to work out? He's like, oh, no. He goes, I got everything I need here. He goes, I just wanted to meet you. He goes, thanks for stopping by. Boom. So when I walked away, I'm like, okay, I can tell you the Pittsburgh Steelers are not going to draft me. They are not interested in my football field. They're more interested in basketball than they were football. So I was like, I know one team that ain't going to draft me. So when the 10th round comes around, my phone rings. It's him. It's the scout. He said, Merrill, I'll never forget what he said. He goes, Merrill, he goes, you ready to be a Steeler? I said, I sure am. He goes, well, I want you to know something. He goes, you can make this team, and we need you. And I was like, that conversation is really all I was looking for, is that opportunity and that chance, and I got it. So and I got drafted too, really by the right team and the right coach, because Chuck Knoll was there, and his thought process in building the team was he looks for football players. He's not looking for the best athlete or the fastest player. He's looking for the best football player. And I was like, when he said that in our team meeting, I'm like, okay, I got a shot here. Because I'm not the fastest, I'm not the best athlete, but I can play football. So I feel like I was fortunate to get drafted by the Steelers.
Yeah, and you know what? I think you kind of started a trend there, though. I mean, that's what they do now, is take basketball players. I know you weren't a tight end, but that's what they do these days.
No.
So maybe you were ahead of the curve.
Hey, there you go. That's right. That's right. That's a good point.
Yeah, and you know, I will date myself here. I started with scrolls, Merle. You know, instead of globes, I just had scrolls that I had to unfurl. So I definitely predate you there. But you know, you talked about Chuck Knoll, which is great, because you know, you had a chance to play for, you know, essentially two Hall of Fame coaches there. But you know, we've talked a lot about Chuck Knoll in the past on the podcast. But what was it like for you playing for a guy like that at that point in his career?
Well, I will say this, you know, I talked to Mel Blount and Rocky Blyer and Joe Green. You know, Joe Green was our defensive line coach when I got in the league. Donnie Shell was, even though it was Donnie's last year, him and Stallworth. I mean, as we go, he was teaching the same thing when he first got there to when he left. That's what made him so good. He was consistent with his principles, and his principles were rock solid. Like his principles in football and what he taught in football actually are what I took and gave the USA football that became heads up football. So Chuck Knoll really was, his principles were what gave you football some direction when they needed it back in 2008 when we launched it. They gave me what I built all my camps around and all my youth football around. And it's three terms: same foot, same shoulder, rising blow, and first contact wins. He said, man, if you play like that, you're a better, safer player. And I never understood that whole process, but let me just put it this way. I'm not going to do it here, but once you get taught those three techniques, he was dead on. He was, the doctors are going to love this. He was adamant about, you're a better, safer player. We had an orthopedic doctor get up and talk to us one day. And he was talking about, you know, the knee is the most, I can't remember how he termed it, but it was like the most vulnerable joint on a football player. And Chuck stood up and he said, no, it ain't. He said, the knee is not the most vulnerable joint. It may be hurt the most. However, if we play the game right, so he gets up and he goes, if we're standing up like this, you're right, it's vulnerable. Can get hurt. That's not how this game is played. So he sinks his hips, bends his knees. He gets in a position that you can strike with, rather you're blocking, tackling, running, doesn't matter. It's the position you always need to be in. He goes, if we're like this, we're a better, safer player. That knee becomes powerful. That knee does not get exposed. and then the doctor had no response. He had no response because he was right. Chuck was right. I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. He was just, you know, I'm telling you, I was smart enough. Even though I was 21, when I walked in that meeting room, I'm like, okay, this is never going to happen to me again in my life. I'm witnessing one of the great people on this planet, and I'm probably never going to experience another person like it, which I have not. But the things that he taught, and not just football, he was fabulous at life lessons and developing young men and developing football players. So grateful I got to play for him.
Awesome. And You know, so, of course, this year with the centennial, we had a second coach inducted. Bill Cowher is now a Hall of Famer. What are your thoughts on that process and Coach Cowher?
Well, I would say this. And I did it on his football life, actually. And we were talking. I remember one of his first meetings, all of us players, actually, we were going, man, I'd hate to be that dude. We're like, I'm telling you, this dude has some huge shoes to fill. And what he's walking into, I'm like, we were all really skeptical. Like, I don't know how he's going to do it. But some of the first things that he addressed us with in our meetings, he said, listen, guys, I'm going to take care of you during the week, and you take care of me on Sunday. And then he went into this, you know, a different way to go about practicing, and he really had a different way to approach things. But saying it's one thing, doing it's another. Well, then we started to see practices were like that. And I'm telling you, we started to like, this guy is unbelievable. Like, he brought an energy to and an enthusiasm. It's like playing for your older brothers, how I look at it. You know, that you just, you want to be like, you want to make sure you don't disappoint. And it was the Houston game, our very first game, that he said, he talked to us about this faint punt that we were going to run. If the situation presented itself, it presents itself in the game. He calls the fake punt. We execute it perfectly. We go on a tear in the AFC that year. We had the best record in football, I believe. I know the best in the AFC. We had home field advantage throughout. But that's when we bought in, you know. And he was an outstanding coach, too. He taught. I mean, he was a great teacher, good listener. And, I mean, I'd love playing for him. He got the most out of me. That's what good coaches do. Chuck got the most out of me. Bill Cowher got the most out of me. And they did it differently. You know, and that's what I love about Bill. He did it his way, and his way was powerful and special.
You know, with so many great coaches, you know, that you got to experience over your career, I ask this, and usually I ask it toward the end of the show, but I know we also have some other guests that are joining us as well. So I wanted to ask now, what was the best advice maybe that – it could be anybody, but what's the best advice that anyone's given you throughout your football career, even if it wasn't necessarily related to football specifically?
Well, it's probably Chuck Knoll's constant reminder about your life's work. That football's not your life's work. Prepare yourself and be ready to move into your life's work. And I've used that all the time. I think about that all the time. And that's where I think he was so amazing at taking football and translating it to the real world. You know, what you're going to experience in any type of industry or business, you're going to run into struggles. There's certain things that you got to do in every craft. If you want to be good at it, you got to work at it. You got to be prepared. And he constantly talked about those things, but he really emphasized your life's work, you know, not football, but your life's work. And I remember the first time I heard that, I'm like, what is he talking about? I'm going to play 20 years here. And then I played my first NFL game. I'm like, okay, maybe I don't play 20 years. So he was just a fabulous guy of keeping perspective and focusing on your life's work, being prepared for your life's work. And something else he said, I think, Mr. The Chief, actually, you know, this is a year before the Chief died. The Chief's first meeting that we had as a team, he talked about all of the community work that the Steelers are a part of and are going to be a part of as players. And I thought that was odd. I'd never been in an environment like this. And I'm like, we didn't talk about football at all. We were talking about how we get back to community. We're involved in the community. And he went on, you know, for a few minutes and some stories. And then when he got done, Chuck stood up. And he probably said something as profound as I've ever heard it right after that. He's like, but men, don't run out and think that every charity is a charity and is a good charity. Make sure you tie yourself to people that are credible. And I was like, And I, okay, this is how dumb I was back then. I was like, well, isn't all, aren't all get people in charities well good? Well, no. I mean, you know, I'd come to find out. But I was like, it was really his wisdom and their perspective on stuff and their overall development of you as a player and a person was, I'm telling you, I don't know that, I'm clearly not who I am today without those experiences and those men in my life.
That's those are some incredible stories. I love hearing like anything like that with best advice, because sometimes, you know what, I'll pick it up too and I'll hold on to it. And I've got several myself that I keep in my back pocket or in the toolbox, I should say. So it's, it's unfortunate with the charity thing, and we've come across that too. And, you know, even scammers and stuff this day and age on the internet, social media, it can be a little rough, but, just kind of segueing into some, more recent or more current stuff. Wanted to get your opinion on, we're going to stick with coaches for 1 second. Got another very good one here with Mike Tomlin. And I know some fans are disappointed that the team missed the playoffs this year. Steelers finished 8-8. But we still contend that he did a heck of a job this year, all considering. What did you think about the job that Mike Tomlin did for this past season?
I'll tell you this, as a staff, you know, and he's responsible because he's the leader. What they were able to do offensively, I don't know that anybody could truly appreciate it. I'm going to tell you this. I've been playing and studying this league for 30-plus years. I had never seen an offense decimated like theirs was. All their receivers, their running backs, their quarterback. I'd never seen it. So to really carve out a season where you're down, you fight, I mean, it comes down to the last game. I'm telling you, if you presented that scenario early on, I'd be lucky if you win 4 or 5 games. You're lucky. You know, mm-hmm. And that's probably being generous. So to do what they did to keep, you know, and then to, you know, players have to be given the credit too, because they got to respond to that. They got to go out and do the work. You know, the coach can, you know, like Chuck used to always say on Saturday, I'm done. You know, his job is not to motivate us. His job is, you know, if you can't motivate yourself, you know, to play this game, then I'll get somebody that is. Because that's not my job. So, you know, you have responsibility to the player. I've always said a coach has all the power, but no control. Once they walk in the white lines of that football field, it's all on them. So Mike and that staff I just think there's no doubt was one of the great coaching jobs I've seen anywhere in any NFL team. So from that perspective, you know, the guy has kind of weathered it all. He's done it all. He's won Super Bowls. You know, he's had winning seasons, and he's, you know, he's not surrendered when, I mean, it was doom and gloom.
Absolutely. You mentioned the injuries. You mentioned what happened with him last year. And one of the things that many fans are talking about this year is James Conner and Benny Snell. And, you know, as an ex-running back, when you look at where the Steelers are right now, what do you think of their room? Do they have enough depth there right now? Or is running back something you think they need to look at as the next draft comes up?
Well, I think you're always going to take to account over the last couple of years, you know, how productive and consistent has a player been. You have to look at that. And unfortunately, they just have had a lot of injuries there. So I don't think there's any question that I look there. I don't think it's a first-round pick. Well, they don't have a first-round pick, but, yeah. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that you probably need to look at there at some point. You know, obviously, I think wide receiver is probably a bigger priority, or a tight end, you know, a guy who can really make a difference in the middle of the field, you know, offensively. For Ben, I think that's probably more so your priority than a running back, you know. And, you know, if those two guys stay healthy, though, listen, Benny Snell, I loved him coming out of Kentucky for one reason. And it's really what I look for when I'm studying kids coming out of the NFL, how they transition And people get confused and they think, you know, if you're great in the SEC, you're going to be great in the NFL. And that is absolutely dead wrong. And there's a skill set that does help a kid transition better from as a running back. One of those is if you have great vertical and lateral quickness and you're decisive. Like if you have that skill set and that's the kind of runner you are, the odds of you transitioning to the NFL are going to be much easier because that's the NFL. The NFL, you play in the middle of the field. In college, you can play on the perimeter because of the hash marks and the speed. And your guys, my guys are better than your guys. The NFL, we're all good. And the hash marks are narrow, and we got to play in the middle of the field. So I love Benny Snell from that perspective, and he really played well. And, you know, if Jamie could stay healthy, that combination, you know, you'd feel good with that combination. The problem is you just haven't been able to keep James healthy all year.
Yeah. And you know what? That's something we're going to be talking about is injuries, either, you know, with yourself, Merrill, or teammates and some other things that you're doing. Before we head in that direction and also introduce some other guests that are going to be with us, I just wanted to, you know, kind of get your insight, too, on there's a lot of people that, you know, James Conner had to overcome, and I know you had something very similar. I believe that this was past your playing years, but you had been diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Of course, Conner had Hodgkin's lymphoma and, defeated it when he was playing at Pitt in college. And, you know, some of the injuries and things that he's gone through, as well as Mason Rudolph and concussions. I know you experienced, you know, some... forgive me, I'm trying to say it like the easiest way because I know it may be a sensitive subject, but you had concussions in your career as well. Could you give some insight to some of our listeners that are, you know, tuning in as to maybe what these guys are experiencing, you know, on and off the football field when it comes to, you know, some, I guess you would call it a setback because, you know, it's something that you have to overcome in addition to all the things like you just said. You know, you're coming from college and playing on a much larger stage. That's big enough as it is, let alone some of these other things that could set you back.
Yeah, and actually it transitions to the doctors too in what hopefully your listeners will bring their attention to where the advancements of medicine and science are today versus where they were back then. So let's start with Mason Rudolph. What happened to me in my career when I was in Chicago, concussions didn't end my career. Improper care of that concussion ended my career. Even in 1994, it's archaic to think that if somebody's just had some type of head trauma, and let's say, I don't care what the environment is, the leading environment for head trauma in the country is tripping and falling. So it isn't even sports. It's not even close. So this could happen. This could happen to anybody, but people are misled thinking it just happens in sports and specifically football. And that is dead wrong. And that's to not be understand that and then not understand how this could possibly happen. Now, if you go back to 1994, what happened to me? I'm playing with the Chicago Bears. I'm not the Steelers. Completely different team and how they handled protocol they had at that time. I get cleared over the phone 5 days later to return to play. After I'm playing a Monday night game in Kansas City and I had a concussion to the magnitude of I didn't remember where I was or who I was for some 12 hours later. Okay. Signs of severity for head trauma are really not losing consciousness. That is not really a sign of severity. Severity for head trauma is stability and cognitive recall. Those two things are most important. That's why. So Mason Rudolph, his cognitive recall, even though it looked terrible, and any head trauma needs to be addressed seriously. But because he lost consciousness, those usually look worse. If you talk about his cognitive recall shortly after, like a half hour after, was crystal clear. He was as sharp as a tack. His baseline, he recovered immediately, and he didn't have the stability issues. He didn't have anything that I had, but what he got was awesome care. I think they even went really to an excess and kept him out just an extra week just because of how bad it looked, because I know he had cleared all of his, got back to his baseline, followed all the protocols, went through the treatments that they had available. In 1994, I got cleared over the phone. I was back playing 5 days later. I sustained another head trauma, another similar blow 5 weeks later. Sends me to cardiac arrest. I'm in intensive care for 2 days. And all they can tell me is you got 2 years to kind of recover from this. Okay, so that's 1994. What exists today, which everybody should be empowered by this information, because this is the real truth about head trauma. You address it correctly, which the Steelers did and Mason Rudolph did. Mason Rudolph's returned to play. He is in no greater danger than before, because that's what is being done in sports today and should be being done in sports. And I'm talking about all levels of sports, not just National Football League, youth sports, every sport. That's why in 2009 I sat in front of Congress and said, hey, listen, 99% of our athletes are 8 to 18. They're not in the NFL and they're not in the NCAA. Let's get protocols here. Well, I mean, it took a while, but we eventually got that. So Mason Rudolph is in a perfect scenario to return back to play and in no great danger. When you look at James Conner having, Hodgkins, really the only thing that's different in him, the guy who discovered this first type of cancer, his name was Hodgkins. Mm-hmm. And then other cancers were discovered after his passing that were similar to these blood cancers. They called it non-Hodgkins. So it's kind of crazy how that is. But they can be similar, but they're never the same. I mean, cell types are different. Treatments are different. I remember James Conner, after he'd went through the treatment and he came back that year. This is the year before he got drafted. One thing I could tell you, after going through the brutal chemotherapy he had to go through, I had to go through, it takes you about a year to fully get back into complete health, just because he's so brutally attacked for so many months, nearly a year. So I'm watching him getting ready for the draft. If you watched his first game and you didn't put a number on it, and then you watched his last game and you didn't have his number on it, you're like, that ain't the same kid. You know, and that's actually some people's negative on him. They're like, well, you know, he didn't look very strong the first year. And I was like, well, when you go through chemotherapy, just the strength that you have at that point, based on when his treatment was done, he doesn't really fully recover till towards the end of the year. And then you saw a big difference in him. And now where he stands as far as that health and what he dealt with at that time, and he's recovered from that. You know, aside from having to have checkups, and sometimes those can be haunting because you got to be reminded of the experience of being diagnosed every time you go for a checkup. You know, the guy's done all the right things too. He's had great care in Pittsburgh. I mean, Dr. Stan Marks in the Hillman Cancer Institute is one of the best in the country. So we got fabulous treatment, and that's where we are today. You know, that actually kind of leads, you know, to what really this whole thing is about, is helping people understand all the treatments that are available today that they may not be aware of, and specifically knee treatments or knee injuries. Because I think, going back to the Chuck Knoll thing and the doctor arguing about that, okay, listen, mm-hmm. the knees do get hurt a lot. Okay, it's not just pro football players. It's not professional athletes. I mean, everybody could be eligible to get their knee hurt. And something is funny. I was just golfing with Mark Malone, and I hadn't seen Mark for a long time, and he had a knee replacement. And, you know, we were just talking about, you know, his replacement. And when he initially got the injury, he tore some cartilage. He had like a train track down his knee. That was archaic. Like, if you think about how they used to do surgeries and how they used to repair cartilage, you're just like, okay, people were like, that's archaic. You can't believe that. However, that was the facts, and that's all they knew then. Mm-hmm. Well, now, and the doctors can jump in and share greater details of this, they now have ways to repair cartilage, you know, with the MACI procedure that allows your body and you to repair the cartilage itself before you lose the joint to a knee replacement. And to have that option for people, I've always said to people, listen, I will never have my knee replaced or anything replaced before I look at some options like this. I'll exhaust this option before I ever let them replace a joint that they can never give me back. And these are the technologies that exist today and that are happening today that people should know about and be excited about, that it could be something that could help repair an injury they have, and they don't have to lose a joint in order to get that chronic pain out of their life.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually, as I was looking over some of the work that you're in right now, specifically innovation, you know, I know this is sports medicine too, but this is probably something that would be very of interest to quite a few people maybe listening out there, even myself. And, you know, I don't want to labor on some of the things that I do, but, you know, I'm getting up there now. I'm 38 and I experience a little bit of lingering pain from various things that I've done. And I'm looking at this, and I want to bring on right now to join Merrill, Dr. Gregory Purnell and Dr. Brian Mosier. And they're going to talk about some of these innovations too. And Merrill had mentioned it's called MACI, and it's about cartilage repair using your own cells. And I was just kind of mind blown too that, you know, there's some clinical studies and stuff, and obviously you guys are the experts, so you're going to have to fill all of us in on this. But this is better when it comes to any kind of like any kind of pain and function, even compared to microfracture. I mean, that's kind of you know, that's kind of mind-blowing to me, because even for my ignorant knowledge of that, you know, you're talking about something that's supposed to be, you know, about the best thing to do for you. And knees, you know, I've always heard, like you were saying, the train track thing, Merrill, knees are a tricky thing, backs are tricky things, stuff like that. Doctors, I don't want to tell you, I don't want to call you fellas. I almost seem like now I'm going to be in a school of higher learning.
It's all
here.
Good. Yeah, fella's fine. It's all good.
So, Greg, or Gregory, or do you go by Greg? I'm sorry.
Greg's perfect.
Greg's perfect. Greg, thanks for joining us. Brian, thanks for joining us. And, gentlemen, go ahead and tell us a little bit about the procedures here.
So it's kind of funny you brought up Mark Malone. I actually grew up in El Cajon, California, the same place Mark is from. But anyways, so, you know, what we're doing is this procedure called MACI, where we take a biopsy. It's a two-stage procedure, basically. And what we do is the first part's an arthroscopy, where we can take a cartilage biopsy and kind of just look at the defect in the patient's cartilage. And then what we can do is we can send the cells up to a lab in Boston that's run by Vericell. What they can do is they can grow up the patient's own cells in the lab, and then they can impregnate them onto a membrane that we can then implant back into the knee on a second procedure to grow up the patient's own cartilage. And really the advantage of that is, you know, it's the patient's own tissue, and it has a lot longer durability than previous procedures like microfracture.
Yeah, I think it's nice when you look at these defects in the knee, and I think it's important to one of the biggest things that we spend as much time as counseling people on who are a good candidate for this. It's part of our job to educate the people that are interested in it but just don't fit the criteria, because it does have some really strict criteria on who we could perform this procedure on. And actually, Brian has used this analogy previously, and I've kind of adapted, is that, you know, if you have a pothole in the cartilage in your knee, we could fix that. If we have to repave the whole road, you need a knee replacement. So this is not really a treatment option for a knee replacement or really bad arthritis. These are for these cartilage defects that are basically potholes in the cartilage. And it definitely is a nicer thing knowing that you have your own cartilage cells back in there, because, like you just said, they last a lot longer than some of these other procedures that don't generate the type of cartilage that we want or that we naturally have in our knee. Some of the older techniques that you were mentioning in microfracture, they develop like a scar tissue type cartilage that doesn't have the same properties and doesn't give you the same effect as your own cartilage will if we're able to put that back into that defect.
Yeah, and I mean, this sounds pretty interesting. You know, another fact here is with the rehab, MACI restores the joint function as early as 6 months after procedure and helps you maybe get back to activity, 9 to 12 months after you would have a surgery. It's a pretty quick turnaround time. Is that right?
Yeah, we typically, I mean, for most activities, they can get back at about the 9 or 12 month mark. I would say anything that involves higher impact activity, like running, we probably sway it more towards the 12-month mark.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's where I'd probably be at then with running, you know.
It depends on a variety of factors, because, you know, we have to correct the patient's alignment in their knee, any ligament issues, as well as restoring that cartilage surface. So it's really a case-by-case basis, and it's really tailored to each individual patient.
Now, gentlemen, you're with the Center for Cartilage Restoration at Allegheny Health Network's Orthopedic Institute. Go ahead and tell some of our listeners, if they want to get some more information on this, where they could find some more information and how they could reach you.
Sure. I would say the best way to reach us is through calling us directly. So as you just mentioned, Allegheny Health Network, Center for Cartilage Restoration. Our office phone number is 412-373-1600. We have a great front office staff that'll be fielding your calls. And if you call that number directly and they know when you're calling about this, that they're going to get you in to see one of us as quickly as they can. And I think the nice thing is that this isn't just for your elite athletes. This isn't for your college athletes, your professional athletes, your high school athletes. I mean, this is something that we see in everyday people, and they don't need to get back to running or doing CrossFit or ultra marathons. These are people that want to get, you know, walk up and down the stairs and not have to take the elevators anymore. Or they want to get down on the ground and be able to kneel and play with their kids. So this isn't just, you know, for the elite athlete. This is something that everybody experiences, and something that, and I would tell you, most of our patients are probably not high level elite athletes that are getting this procedure done.
No, definitely not myself or Brian. I would probably ever be considered elite athletes. Although Brian, you should share
Don't be so hard on yourself.
Yeah. Although Brian, I know he doesn't like me to put this out there, and you know, he's a little shy about it. But what, 100 pounds you've lost?
103.
103 right now. So you know, he's been working out very. Yeah, he's been working out very hard here. You know, getting everything in order. And Brian, and how old are you, too? It just isn't that achievement, but how old were you? I don't want to say 105 as well, but
56.
56. I was going to say 53, man. I was going to make you a little younger there, but yeah. So.
But I feel 12.
And you acted, too, but, you know, doctors, thanks for joining us. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule.
Absolutely.
As well.
Thank you.
Merrill, once again, thank you for bringing the doctors with you on this show. And, you know, everything comes full circle here from the beginning of your career with Chuck Knoll, speaking about with the knees and stuff. We're talking about even current players with, you know, James Conner. We're talking about every day, you know, an average Joe, just like me or Brian. So, you know, it kind of all ties in all together, and there's just, you know, one other thing, not to throw you off guard, but usually another thing we like to ask any of our guests is, too, is there anything special out there that most of our listeners would not know about you that you would care to reveal as well?
Huh.
That's the response I usually get, man.
Yeah. Yeah, the part is that you care to reveal. That's here's something I care to reveal that probably nobody, I've told it maybe once, very few, but a lot of people know it. I tell people, like what is one of the best job you ever had, or what's the first job you ever had? And this is going to kind of end up how the whole thing started. Because I'm sure this never happened in Western Pennsylvania, maybe in Pennsylvania period, maybe in the East Coast period because of what I'm about to say. But I, when I was about eight, nine, ten, 11, I had a gopher trapping job and my brother and I ran about 800 acres and we did it for farmers and ranchers and gophers back in the West because irrigation in the West is much different than it is in the East because it never rains there in the summertime, is you do flood irrigation. And when you flood irrigate areas, gopher holes can really make it difficult to water the pasture for cattle. And if you get to, gopher holes too, cows can, horses step in and break their legs. So they like to get rid of the gophers. And so my brother and I, we were gopher trappers for years. We would set up about 30, 40 traps in the morning, 30, 40 at night. We would capture anywhere from 50 to 100, depending if it was a 2 or 4 day day week work that we did. We cut their tails off, we put them in a jar, and then we took our horses and we rode them to the local convenience store and got paid a dollar a tail. So it was one of the greatest jobs I ever did. It was one of the funnest jobs I ever did. And sometimes when I tell the story, I'm like, I can't believe I did that job. I can't believe it. I mean, riding a horse to the convenience store is just something you don't do anymore. And we used to do that all the time as a kid.
Well, it wasn't any revelation like the location of Jimmy Hoffa's body, so we're still looking for that one.
Nothing like that.
All right. Well, I know we're up against it, so Merrill and Docs, thanks for joining us, and thanks for taking time out of your schedule to be on the podcast.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, Brian. Well, you know, we had to. Our guests were all on. A very strict schedule there, and I thank them for even spending a few extra minutes than they had allotted or set aside for us. So once again, a thank you to Merrill Hodge. A thank you to both of the doctors, Dr. Brian Mosier and Dr. Greg Purnell. Once again, that's the Center for Cartilage Restoration. That's at Allegheny Health Network's Orthopedic Institute. And I'm going to give everyone the phone number here, too, if they want to jot it down real quick. That is area code 412-373-1600. I guess in the part of the country, you know, Western Pennsylvania, even in some of Northeast Ohio, I always talk about this. My grandmother, my mother, they all talked with the Yinzers speak. They always used to say yins and things like that. And I almost said like 16, you know, 1600. No one ever says like 00, do they? Do they do that where you're at, Brian? Or I know you grew up over on this part of the, I don't want to say the world, like the globe that Merrill was talking about, but this part of the country too, you know, we have these little euphemisms and things of that nature. Sure. Do you do the 00 or do you do the 00?
I do 00, but you know, there's a variety of different things. And yeah, you know, you're fairly safe in saying it's a different part of the world, because I'll tell you, I've been here for quite a while, and it's still like a different world.
Is it soda or pop?
Here it's soda.
That's
and here's what I'll do. I'll give my brother, the one who lives out here and who is an Eagles fan and was dropped on his head. As I said, they were both dropped on their heads. But this one, when he moved out here from Ohio, he couldn't stop saying pop, right? He's like, give me a pop. And so they would laugh at him and they'd go, what do you mean, like Sody Pop? And so he got a nickname of Soda. And that's been his nickname for years and years and years, and he hates it, which is why I'm bringing it up.
You know, and I also, I do like some retro video game stuff, and I have a small blog on the side, too, and it just reminds me of one of the Punch-Out characters. I think it was Soda Popinski, which it would be just perfect. He may even be from Pittsburgh in the video game. I don't know. It's a very it's a Polish name, and I could say that because I'm part Polish. So anyways, poking some fun at that. We're out of time, Brian. So thank you for, you know, joining me with this today, too. We just – you know, me and you, we got to meet Dirt. We got to meet Rod Woodson, you know, a year or two ago. We've got to have Tunch on. Now we got Merrill. Who else is left from the 80s that's on the bucket list here? I mean, I know Greg Lloyd was at the tail end there. Maybe we could find somebody like David Little or Hardy Nickerson or Gary Anderson would be big for me, because, you know, I'm a big fan of the kickers and the specialists.
Absolutely. And you know, as we've been hinting, this is one of the things we were hinting about, you know, and maybe this isn't the end of it. We'll have to wait and see. We could have more surprises to come.
Dum, 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 and a drum roll. So we'll leave it at that, folks. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. Brian, my buddy, thanks once again. His name's Brian. My name's Joe. Until next time, we encourage all of our listeners to be safe, be good, and we'll catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.